broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the wonderful world of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore, on this episode 926, and I'm joined today by the lovely and the talented and the scholarly, Brittany Page.
I thought you were also going to say, and the clean teeth having Brittany Page. Because I have clean teeth now.
I'm guessing that's what you meant. Why are clean teeth something to talk about now as opposed to any other time of your life? Do you normally have horribly grody teeth?
Well, if you ask my dentist in California, Clint, the answer is yes. Yeah. Because I was regularly dying of my teeth when I was going to see Clint. But I have figured out now that Clint was kind of a scam artist dentist, you know.
He was also a creeper.
He was a little creepy as well, yes, but also a scam artist who was always trying to scare me about dying of my teeth because, you know, after I moved and got a new dentist, that has not been an issue. I have not been told that I'm dying of my teeth.
You are more fastidious about your oral hygiene than anybody I know.
I do a decent job. I will say I'm doing a lot better lately. I even told my dentist today, because I went to the dentist today.
Oh, what you did? You went to the dentist today. Did you get your teeth cleaned?
I got my teeth cleaned at the dentist.
Are they clean?
They're so clean. I told my dentist today that I think I'm a daily flosser now. And I used to be pretty good about flossing, but it wasn't daily. It was, you know, several times a week, but I don't think it was daily. And now it's a habit. Mm. And I told her how strange. She's probably so annoyed, right? She deals with people all day who refuse to listen, who refuse to just floss their fucking teeth. And I'm like, yeah, it just kind of happened. Now I feel like gross if I don't floss my teeth every night. And she's like, yeah, exactly.
That's funny because when I'm with the dentist, we share the same dentist.
Yes.
We share her. We're very gracious people like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We just talk about politics the whole time.
No, I talk to her about politics the whole time,
really?
Too. Yeah, after we get done talking about how great I am at flossing.
I think she knows trying to get me to floss every day is like, that's a lost cause. We might as well just talk about politics.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice, again, because if we're going back to Clint, if I had to guess, I think Clint, my California dentist, was probably a Trump supporter. And so it is nice going to a dentist that, number one, isn't always trying to convince me I'm dying, but also isn't always trying to empty my pockets and try to get me to agree to have unnecessary procedures that I don't need. But also have a dentist that I agree with on values and principles and politics.
It's good for me because, you know, this is what we do. So we're in it. We're terminally online. We're unhealthily online to a degree that, you know, is just not normal. So I think it's easy for me, I'll just speak for myself, to get caught up in thinking that everybody's aware of everything we're aware of, and they're just as afraid of the things we're afraid of. And it's nice to talk to her because she is afraid of the same shit we're afraid of.
Oh, totally.
She's not as plugged in as us, but the same concern she has, we have.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how plugged in she is. She was talking to me very specifically about J.D. Vance today and how he's particularly vile and how he's particularly spineless. And she said he's reminiscent of, like, Lindsey Graham. Like, she was naming other people who are spineless. And it was, yeah, I mean, it is nice to talk to someone who seems to grasp. But also, she like shares the perspective that we had in terms of feeling the doom and gloom when Biden was the candidate and then feeling optimistic. And it's always nice to talk to people about that. It seems to be a near universal feeling that people had going into this election where so many people were feeling doom and gloom. Although if you read YouTube comments, it didn't feel like that. But more like on right. the on the ground conversations right, with right, actual right. people, it seemed to be that people were very scared before Biden stepped down, and now people aren't as afraid, yeah, which
I
is
think,
nice.
I think the difference, at least for me, was you don't want to speak that into existence, to use a weird woo kind of a term. You don't want to give it space. You don't want to let that idea catch on and then have it be a runaway train against Biden. But we were pretty, you know... Yeah, do we want a better candidate? Do we think there's a better? Yeah, yeah. Biden's not our first choice, but he is what we've got. And while he's here, while he's the candidate, we're supporting that guy because the alternative is fucked.
Yeah.
Absolutely fucked.
Yeah. So it's nice to go to the dentist and have a nice little political conversation. And we also talked about Earth, Wind, and Fire, actually, because she noticed my shirt. And it has Earth, Wind, and Fire on the back. And she asked me, oh, I noticed your shirt. Are you an Earth, Wind, and have you seen them? Did you see them recently? I'm like, I've seen them like 5 times. And
I think it's like 6.
The last time was in Boston. And she's like, oh, was that with Lionel Richie? And I was
oh,
like,
wow,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. So it was also nice to talk to a fellow Earth, Wind, and Fire fan as well.
There's no like, there's no nickname for it. You know, like they're Swifties.
Hmm. What would the nickname be?
All right, a topic for another day.
Yeah, I need some time to think about that. There's probably one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That someone's come up with. Let me know if anyone is yeah. a fan in the audience. And
there you go, 657-464-7609. And of course, email the old-fashioned way, idoubtit@dollamore.com.
So we have some listener communication. This is related to not our last episode, but the one before that, because the last one was a debate recap. The one before that was, I believe, Jesse Waters was Asshole of Today. And it was about a comment that he made regarding Tim Walz using a straw. And Jesse Waters has this very particular view about men using straws.
Fear of dick centered.
Yeah. He's like, whoa, that straw, everyone's going to think that you have a dick in your mouth if you use a straw. So he's like very worried about it. It takes up a lot of, you know, when people talk about like a high cognitive load,
yes.
when you have a lot of stress,
yes.
Jesse Waters has that, but like exclusively thinking about if people think that the objects he's putting in or near his mouth are like dicks. So this voicemail, by the way, we've been trying not to cuss as much lately on the show, and I feel like we're starting off very poorly at the top of the show here.
Well, we still have another hour, so.
All right. So
you can reel it in.
Yeah, yeah. So the voicemail that we're going to play first and the email that we're going to read after are related to that segment in particular.
Hey, Jesse and Brittany, the best part. Excuse me, I was just enjoying a milkshake while I call in because, oh God, that tastes so good.
Using a straw.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Popped out and shot a little milkshake right into my eye. Kind of stings. Oh.
Still going at it.
Oh, my God, that's so good. Oh, anyway, you guys... Oh, I stuck the straw too far in my mouth, and I kind of choked a little. Oh, man. Keep up the good work. Oh, this is Patrick in Montana.
Montana.
That's Montana with a high T.
Oh.
You don't spell Montana with a low T. Goddamn no. Have a great day.
Well, fantastic. Patrick in Montana.
I thought that was Jesse Waters. I'm disappointed.
It very well could have been. He's just in disguise.
Yes, yes.
You know how all the real men travel to Montana or Montana
mm-hmm.
to do their fishing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's where Tucker Carlson was accosted in that tackle shop by that dude. They're both the like, Battle of the Flannel.
Oh.
Remember that clip?
So Montana is also where Richard Spencer
lived
for or sure. was or what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His parents are there.
Yeah. Okay. So that's just
but also,
a
you know, users of straws also live there. Normal, decent individuals who are not afraid to drink delicious and apparently dangerous milkshakes.
Mm-hmm.
get that eye checked out.
Yeah, so thank you for that. All right, we have an email from Emma. Hey, dudes. Someone said something like 2 years ago during the summer of trans panic when red states were on crusades to ban drag shows and gender-affirming care.
Yeah, what happened to that? Apparently that's not an existential threat anymore, huh?
And wanting to do gender screening for high school sports and all that hurtful shit. But I do think it's relevant now. Conservatives think way more about genitalia than the average person, especially during that summer, but obviously before that, and it has persisted to this day. It seems that penis is at the forefront of their minds at all times, whether there's a man using a drinking straw or obsessing over an African boxer. There's just something about it that never leaves their brain. I'm no psychiatrist, but it seems as if there's a mental illness linked to the alpha male mindset. Parenthetically, and my dad is the same way. With winter coming up, I'm sure it will be gay to use lotion or wear gloves to protect yourself from the cold. Real men have the driest nail beds on earth and relish in the open wounds when they finally crack and bleed. But I digress. I continue to love the show, and Brittany is the best part. Emma C.
Love the show. Brittany's the best part.
Well, Emma, unlike you, I am a psychiatrist. And in my professional opinion, you are absolutely correct. Yeah. It is a weird obsession with dick and balls and vagina and what parts people have under their clothes. It's a weird thing. Well, it's not fucking normal or healthy.
Yes. I would hope that as a society, we're starting to make some progress related to all of this, but sometimes it feels like we're not. But it is funny that Emma mentioned her dad's views here about it being gay to use lotion or to wear gloves to protect yourself from the cold. And I don't know if I talked about it. I think I mentioned my dad was like a very macho, you know, working out all the time, measuring his biceps every day, measuring his chest every day. But I don't think I talked about like the other aspects of it where when we were kids, using Band-Aids was for pussies. And also using helmets was for pussies. Like when you were riding your bike.
Yeah, of course, you know, of course. Yeah.
Instead of like crucial for safety and preventing death and damage and destruction to your head, it was for pussies to do that. So
it's going to be a theme here because our asshole of today, it kind of parlays right into this.
Yeah, and that's what I guess I mean by I'm hoping that we're making progress on this. It seems like in conservative circles,
they're not.
Yeah, there's still these very draconian ideas about gender stereotypes and whether or not you fit into these stereotypes and upholding quote-unquote traditions and like, it's okay. You should use lotion. It's really nice. It keeps your skin looking good. It keeps you looking fresh.
Also, a straw is a wonderful vessel, a vehicle to get a liquid drink out of a cup.
Yeah.
And into your body.
Use a straw. It's great. Use a helmet. It protects you. Wear some gloves when you're cold. It's okay to get cold. It's okay to admit when you're feeling a little chilly and you need to warm up.
So weird.
You're going to be all right. We're all going to be all right.
Look, I still don't get it. And I grew up in this nonsense, as did you.
Yeah.
All right. Doctor is out. Thank you, Emma and Patrick. We appreciate it very much.
Yes, we appreciate you. And you can follow in their footsteps and leave us a voicemail or send us an email. You can call 657-464-7609 or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
We do want to thank our Patreon supporters, and we want to throw it up. I guess into the air.
You're still in YouTube mode right
now. The Patreon address, if you too would like to help support this work and help produce this show, go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast.
We want to thank our new Patreon supporters, GG.
GG.
John S.
John S.
P-E.
P-E. Is that Public Enemy or just P-E?
It is not Public Enemy.
All right.
Christopher A.
Christopher A.
Just Saying.
Just Saying.
Angela P.
Angela P.
Deborah P.
Deborah P.
Ellen B.
Ellen B.
Jacob M.
Jacob M.
Nick P.
Nick P.
I am JP.
I am JP.
Pepperonis.
P P for pepperonis.
Kelly H.
Kelly H.
Thank you so much for your beautiful support on Patreon. We could not do the show without our Patreon supporters. And if you would like to join them, you can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. I just want to make a quick note. We're still doing our fundraiser for the National Abortion Federation.
Yes, please.
That will be open on YouTube through September 30th. So if you can donate to that, great. If you cannot donate to that, please do not worry about it. We say that about everything, right? We say that about becoming a Patreon supporter. We say that about donating to a fundraiser, whatever it may be. If you cannot afford to give money, please do not feel pressure to do so. Do not worry about it. Please take care of yourself first.
But also know this, that later in the show, we're going to be talking about Donald Trump's plan to lessen your grocery bills. So maybe then after he's done that, you will have a little extra money to throw toward a fundraiser.
All right. So, but we're serious about that. And sometimes people will write us and say, you know, I have to stop my Patreon support because I'm, you know, something's happening. And we always appreciate that people feel like they want to tell us that, you know, because people feel like they need to, but you really don't need to. And we will always say, please take care of yourself first. And that's really important to us. So I'm going to put a link to my latest YouTube video. And on that video, you will see the fundraiser that you can donate to. So if you can, we'd really appreciate that.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Stalemocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So the first thing that we want to talk about, we don't have a clip for it. It is just an article that is floating around, a story on the internet.
Underreported, very underreported. I took screenshots. I went to the guy's Facebook page. I verified that it was all true. I was going to do a video on it. And there's just been so much. I haven't had time. So I'm glad we're talking about it here.
Oh, are you talking about the Ohio sheriff with the signs?
Yeah, yeah. Is that not what we're talking about
first?
Yeah,
that's not what I'm talking about yet. I was like,
all right,
you didn't need to do all that work because it was just reported in the New York Times. So there was an officer in New York City.
This also underreported, though. I haven't heard anything on the New York Times, but not CNN, not MSNBC. I haven't seen this anywhere.
Yeah, so according to reporting from the New York Times, New York City on Tuesday reached a $175,000 settlement with a Staten Island police officer who said he had been a victim of retaliation for giving traffic tickets to people with connections to the upper echelons of the police department. Now, it's not just that he was giving traffic tickets to people with connections, okay? And this is almost going to sound like a joke, but it's real. The people that had connections, they were friends and family of people in the police department, they were given what is called courtesy cards. And courtesy cards are issued from the police union, apparently.
It's like a fucking get out of jail free card.
That's seriously what it is. And so this officer would pull people over, basically. And they were
driving in a manner that would justify a ticket, so dangerously, illegally. Out of step with the norm.
Right. And they would present their courtesy card to say, hello, I'm a friend and family member. I can break the law. It's fine. Don't worry about me. And he was like, no, I'm still going to give you a ticket. And then he was punished for doing that.
Yeah.
He was taken off of the traffic unit. And that was after the chief of patrol, who is now the department's highest ranking uniformed officer, asked that he be punished for writing these tickets to people with courtesy cards.
And after the settlement was initiated, is still a cop. Not the guy who received the settlement, he's gone, but the guy who retaliated against him is still a cop.
Yeah, so the officer who filed a lawsuit against the city, his name is Matthew Bianchi, and his attorney released a statement to the New York Times, quote, "This settlement is a vindication for our client, allowing him to close this chapter and continue his service with the NYPD. Wonder how that's going to go.
Oh, he is still a cop.
We hope that Officer Bianchi, I hope I'm saying that correctly, Bianchi's courage and this decisive outcome will inspire other officers to come forward as whistleblowers." Now, the thing is, the settlement, like you said, did not involve, you know, the city having to admit that they did something wrong.
Of course.
And they actually denied most of his allegations, including the role of, you know, that high-ranking officer, their role in his transfer out of the traffic.
They just paid because they're fun like that. They're just fun. They like little bonuses for the guy.
Yeah. So it's remarkable to think things like this exist. And again, we hear the comment a lot when we're doing things online from people that say, "Are you surprised?" You know, and it's like, okay, again, no, we're not surprised because, of course, this is something that, you know, you kind of unfortunately would expect, but it does still feel a little cartoonish in its level of corruption, where it's, you know, after all of the stories that come out about corruption in police departments, you would think that in 2024 they would stop issuing people courtesy cards.
Well, listen, it's bad enough that you see cops drive like assholes in uniform in their patrol cars. And then it's extended. It's bad enough also when you hear stories about police chiefs getting passes for driving drunk or whatever. And it's just more, it's compounded shittiness when all you have to be is tangentially related or connected to a cop. You get a courtesy card, and then you can drive dangerously and like an asshole that would justify and warrant a ticket. But because you're connected somehow or you know some, it's antithetical to equal justice under the law. Absolutely, without doubt.
Well, and an additional story about cops is what you previously brought up.
I jumped the gun on.
Yeah, is the sheriff in Ohio who took to his Facebook page, his public Facebook page, by the way, and made a post disparaging Vice President Kamala Harris and immigrants. And he also made a suggestion, this is why it's making the news, that residents should compile a list of addresses where they see yard signs in support of Kamala Harris and Tim Walz.
Nazi shit.
People shouldn't feel ashamed or scared what sign they have in their front yard.
But many residents in Portage County are feeling scared after Sheriff Bruce Zukowski said the following on Facebook about Kamala Harris supporters. Quote, "When people ask me what's going to happen if the flip-flopping laughing hyena wins, I say write down all the addresses of the people who had her signs in their yards. So when the illegal human locust, which she supports, needs places to live, will already have the addresses of their new families who supported their arrival." End quote. Those with Harris yard signs in their lawn now feeling intimidated.
A threatening post to me and my wife because we have a sign out here that says who we want to win for president. And it's a threatening implication for those who are immigrants coming in.
The post comes as Zukowski runs for re-election this November, his opponent John Barber reacting.
Calling the vice president a terrible name and calling people of immigration status a terrible name, I think pretty much shows some level of I don't know any other word to use than racism, and it's an unfortunate thing.
Meanwhile, Portage County Commissioner Tony Badalamenti has filed a complaint with the Ohio Attorney General's office.
I believe that if you're a Democrat or Republican and I'm opposite, it's your choice, and I should have the free right and will, without being intimidated, that I can share my beliefs or have a belief in whatever I do.
We're taking down names. We're creating lists of political opponents. And not just political opponents. We're taking names and addresses and identifying information of supporters of a certain political party. Going into the clip saying Nazi shit. How am I wrong? How is this not Nazi shit?
Well, and this sheriff also shared photos in his post of Aurora, Colorado, and Springfield, Ohio. Of course, Springfield, Ohio is being terrorized by the false accusations being leveled against the town and against the immigrants who live there by the most powerful people
yeah.
that have the biggest microphones and the biggest platforms, Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, all of these Republicans coming forward to continue spreading these lies.
And people who have proven themselves to be able to dispatch a violent, unhinged mob
right.
to exact whatever revenge that they feel is necessary.
Right, right.
This just in from the sheriff in Portage County, Ohio.
Donald Trump, baby!
And that's who he is. Have you seen pictures of him?
He's
just a fucking hillbill.
I read that you're talking about the sheriff,
yeah.
right? Yeah. I did see that he had photos of himself with J.D. Vance and other pictures of him with, like, Trump allies, like Michael Flynn.
He's wearing, like, an American flag Vivek. Fucking shirt. He's just the archetypal MAGA douche.
So it's scary, again, to think about someone like this being in a position of power. He has the ability to revoke people's freedoms. Mm-hmm. He can carry a weapon.
Yeah.
And he is taking pictures with Michael Flynn. You know, like, this is...
yeah, initiators and supporters of coups.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary. So...
not surprising, not shocking, but still fucking scary.
So we'd love to know what you think about this. 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. Donald Trump has been making various public appearances, including after his quote-unquote second attempted assassination.
I know you're saying it because that's what they're calling it.
I said quote-unquote.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm quoting the media.
Because it was not an assassination attempt. It was a dude open carrying in Florida, which is legal, who just happened to be camped out on a certain hole. It wasn't an attempt. He probably had intent in his heart to do Donald Trump harm, but he did not attempt to do so. Any rounds that were fired by Secret Service at him, and he fled.
Yeah, I mean, we're basically living in Minority Report. You know, we don't know what was in his heart.
He Precogs.
Was, listen, he was laying there for 12 hours, but, you know.
He was sleepy, like... Brittany. He was just a tired fella. He saw some soft bed of pine needles. Here's a place to lay down. Let me rest my weary head on my AK-47.
All right. Well, Jesse has one perspective of that. So Donald Trump made an appearance in Michigan.
In Flint.
With Sarah Huckabee Sanders, oddly, the governor of Arkansas, his former press secretary. And this is my favorite moment from the town hall. I didn't watch a lot of it because, you know, why would you? But he's still obviously very hurt by that moment that we talked about on the last episode during the debate when Kamala Harris noted that she said, go to his rallies and you will see that he is rambling and he's talking about nothing and people start leaving his rallies. And you can tell that this has been something that Donald Trump is ruminating on. He can't stop thinking about it. He feels so slighted by this in particular. We knew he was slighted in the moment. He is still slighted now.
Of all the things that people have said about Donald Trump, this is the thing that really sticks in his craw. Listen, if a human has a craw, Donald Trump definitely has a craw, and it's probably in one of those folds under his fucking chin.
So this is Donald Trump really on one today.
The views and opinions of Jesse Dollimore are solely those of Jesse Dollimore and do not reflect the views and opinions of Brittany Page, who is a far superior person and much more measured and reasonable in her views and analysis.
Just in case. There's more to come, so.
Okay, so this is Donald Trump.
Back to the craw talk.
Responding to something that Sarah Huckabee Sanders says, and he can't resist talking about his crowds that definitely do not leave.
And Mr. President, we don't mind that you give long answers because you actually have something to say, because you actually got something done when you were president.
You know, it's a very interesting, Christine. She said, I guess said, I don't think I've ever said this before. So we do these rallies. They're massive rallies. Everybody loves. Everybody stays till the end, by the way. You know, when she said that, well, your rallies, people leave. Honestly, nobody does. And if I saw them leaving, I'd say, and ladies and gentlemen, make America great again. And I'd get the hell out. OK, because I don't want people leaving. But I do have to say, so I give these long, sometimes very complex sentences and paragraphs, but they all come together. I do it a lot. I do it with Raising Cane, that story. I do it with the story on the catapults on the aircraft carriers. I do it with a lot of different stories. When I mention Dr. Hannibal Lecter, I'm using that as an example of people that are coming in from Silence of the Lambs. I use it. They say, it's terrible. So they say, so I'll give this long, complex area. For instance, that I talked about a lot of different territory.
So he's rambling about how he doesn't ramble, for one.
I like that he says at the start of that that he's never said this before, trying to act like this just came to me. I haven't been ruminating about this. I wasn't prepared to talk about this, but I might as well bring it up.
Yeah, well, now that you brought it up, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, we definitely didn't coordinate what you were going to say and what you were going to ask at all to give me the heads up at all.
Oh, love that for him.
They want this guy to be president of the United States again.
Yeah.
They are fucking champing at the bit, eager for this guy to be the leader of the free world again.
Yeah, well, and I love these because I'm back to watching undecided voter panels and torturing myself. A lot of them will say, you know, I really liked Kamala Harris at the debate with Trump, but I just need to hear more about their policies.
Right.
I need to hear more about what Trump is going to do and what Kamala Harris is going to do, and I need to know more about their policies.
Douche chill.
And the interesting thing about that is that when Donald Trump is asked about his policies, you know, I did a video on this biker who was in the crowd of a Fox News event and asked Donald Trump how he plans to lower the cost of housing. And Donald Trump said, drill, baby, drill. And he talked about like China and he talked about bacon. And so this happened again at this town hall. You would think that they would, you know, screen out people who have very specific policy questions for him since it's not his strongest point. And this woman asks him what his plan is to lower the cost of groceries.
Mom of three, a grandmother of seven, and three great grands, a registered nurse, retired nurse. So I know the cost that goes into raising children and running a household.
Yeah.
People just can't survive now. How are you going to bring down the cost of food and groceries?
Good. Very good.
All right. That's the question. I just want to pause. How are you going to bring down the price of food and groceries? That's the question.
Here we go.
Here's the answer.
Thank you. So we have to start always with energy. Always. I don't want to be boring about it, but there's no bigger subject. It covers everything. If you make donuts, if you make cars, whatever you make, energy is a big deal. And we're going to get that. It's my ambition to get your energy bill within 12 months down 50%. If I can do that, you've done a hell of a job. 50. Interest rates are going to follow, and actually they're going to follow for another reason. The economy is now not good, and interest rates, you'll see, they'll do the rate cut and all the political stuff tomorrow, I think. And, you know, will he do a half a point? Will he do a quarter of a point? But the reason is because the economy is not good. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to do it. But we're going to get interest rates down, and we got to work with our farmers. Our farmers are being decimated right now. They're being absolutely, absolutely decimated. And, you know, one of the reasons is we allow a lot of farm product into our country. We're going to have to be a little bit like other countries. We're not going to allow so much come. We're going to let our farmers go to work. And I don't know if you remember, I love the farmers because, you know, I had many meetings as president. I had this gorgeous room with this beautiful table that seats about 35 people. And I was with the farmers. Usually everybody wants something. They all want subsidy. But I was with the farmers, and I think you might have been there, actually, Sarah. I said, look, fellas, we're going to get you such a beautiful subsidy, meaning I'm going to do things. And one of the people raises his hand, sir, honestly, we don't want a subsidy. This is the first time this ever happened to me. Everyone wants, they want money, they want to build windmills. We want money with these windmills. Ay, ay, ay. Anyway, but you know what? It was amazing. He said, almost tears in his eyes, they were getting decimated. We don't want a subsidy.
Fucking
we just want
tears in the eyes. Constantly with the fucking tears in the eyes.
They had tears in their eyes and they said, we hate subsidies.
We don't want
help.
Your money. We just want to farm. We just want to do work, sir.
So if you...
Hang on, I'm not done crying about the no subsidies.
It is so funny he always says that. You immediately know he's lying because he's like... They felt so strongly about it. They almost had tears in their eyes. Like, no, they didn't. This didn't even happen. This conversation did not happen.
Well, listen, at least he finally gave an answer. Now we know exactly what he's going to do to lower the price of food and groceries.
Mm-hmm. Reduce the supply of food.
Also, we're going to work with our farmers. What the fuck does that mean? You're going to work with the farmers? You're going to energy. We're going to lower the... It's going to be down 50%. What the fuck does that mean? What do you mean? How are you going to do that? Right now, we are exporting energy. Oil, we're at the highest production level, maybe in history. Certainly higher than when Donald Trump was in office. So how is he going to improve upon that metric even more than what Joe Biden has done? It's fucking nonsense. And he is met with adulation and cheers and hoops and hollers. Yay for Trump. He's going to do it, but we don't know how.
Well, and this is the strange thing about those, again, undecided voter panels, and I think they just want attention. That's really what I've determined, is that they are desperate for attention.
Certainly plays a role.
And they will say, you know, my big question is, why, if these are Kamala Harris's policies, then why hasn't she implemented them in the years that she's already been in office?
Why did she not yield that massive constitutionally mandated power as Vice President of the United States in between going to state funerals and stuff? Why wasn't she implementing hard-hitting policy that is the job of the president?
Well, and it's tough for me to remember who tweeted that. I think it was... Oh, Benny Johnson? That's a person, right?
He's the guy who got paid by Russia, yeah.
Yeah, I think he tweeted a quote about Kamala Harris wanting to increase the child tax credit, make it permanent, and he said something to the effect of, why hasn't she done this already, right? And it's like, because of Republicans who won't support it, and Democrats like Joe Manchin, who's basically a Republican.
Yes.
And Kristen Sinema, who's basically a Republican. It's the Republicans that stand in the way, you know? But you hear that from undecided voters, too, where when they're asking, why isn't she already implementing these things, I think it's because they fundamentally don't understand how government works.
Yeah, sure.
And it's really kind of an education issue. But, you know, Donald Trump, there's a new book coming out about him, as though we don't have enough Donald Trump books, but this one should be interesting because it hits on another sensitive point during the debate where Kamala Harris talked about how he inherited millions of dollars and then filed bankruptcy numerous times. And that was another very sensitive point for Donald Trump because it's part of his mythology to tell people that he
got a very small loan for $1 million.
Right.
Yeah.
And that he turned it into this.
Billions and billions and billions, he says.
Thank you for filling that in for me. This amazing empire, right? And we know that's not true, but now we have new reporting from Russ Buettner and Suzanne Craig, two New York Times reporters. They're the co-authors of Lucky Loser, and they sat down for an interview with Aaron Burnett on CNN to talk a little bit about the loans that Donald Trump received, the money that he got from his dad, and what he did to squander it.
You reveal Trump's father, Fred, repeatedly bankrolled his son. And we know, you know, he had been given money, but you guys document all the different ways it happened, including a $15 million loan, Russ, that you revealed Donald Trump never paid back. $15 million. Tell me more.
So that was to help him with the construction of Trump Tower. Every week as he built up construction costs, he was having problems paying his bills. And so his father was loaning him money over that period of time. And then that just stayed. He was supposed to pay interest back on that. He never did that. But then years later, when Donald Trump started another building called Trump Plaza, they rolled that money into an investment into Trump Plaza. Well, Trump Plaza was really ill-advised. It was built right as the real estate market was collapsing. Everyone around him thought, this is not a good idea. You're not going to make your money back. He went forth. Guess what? He didn't make his money back. And his father declared on his tax returns a $15 million loss to write off other income that his father made. His father made a lot of money. So that was actually an illegal tax return. They somehow converted that $15 million with a loan Trump Tower into a tax loss that reduced his income on another building.
All right, so that's fraud on one level. On another very basic level, that's Trump taking $15 million and turning it into zero, which is another thing that goes totally against the entire ethos and brand that he's put out there, Suzanne. You know what I found fascinating about this as well, though, is, you know, you lay all this out, but you also talk about how, you know, he talks about he's this real estate mogul.
Right.
And yet, and that's actually how, you know, he gets The Apprentice. And yet it turns out from your reporting, The Apprentice, that you got tax returns, you got confidential business documents that no one's ever seen before that reveal he got, what, $400 million from The Apprentice. That could be his biggest success.
It's incredible. When we look at the title is Lucky Loser, because he lived a life. He was born lucky. He was born into a wealthy family. And he also had a father with connections in the real estate industry. He went into it and he inherited hundreds of millions of dollars from his father. So that's just luck right there.
I love the framing. And also getting the plug in that naturally was really fantastic. Lucky Loser is the name of the book. But the conservatives resist talk about luck.
Yeah.
And they talk about hard work. But Donald Trump was born into wealth and he was given every opportunity. And instead of trying to, you know, keep the ladder on the ground, trying to reinforce that ladder for other people to be able to climb up, he wants to create policies that help pull that ladder up so that people can be left behind.
He's insulated by his money from failure.
Right. And unfortunately, a lot of people who are going to be negatively impacted by the policy preferences of the Republican Party that prefer to give tax breaks to rich people and corporations, they're going to be hurt by those policies because they're not rich people. Most people in the Republican Party, most people who are going to vote for Donald Trump. So it's very strange what he's been able to do, which is capitalize on this mythology that he's created about himself and use it to generate additional support from people that should really despise him and what he's done.
Yeah, it's a thread, though, that runs through conservatism. It runs through politics in general, I think, probably, that you've got these elites who paint themselves as the everyman. You know, Tucker Carlson, Robert Kennedy Jr., two absolutely privileged, super wealthy, super connected people who, I'm looking at the board here, just sat down with one another, which should alarm everybody that RFK Jr. is sitting down with a literal motherfucking Nazi. Someone who just sat down with a Nazi saying that it was actually Winston Churchill who was the villain of World War II, not the villainous genocidal maniac Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, and that's not even to say all the other things that Tucker Carlson, sorry, it's hard to keep all that straight, that Tucker Carlson has said, including that immigrants make our country poorer and dirtier.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, RFK sat down with him. I guess Tucker Carlson has a show somewhere. I'm not sure where it is. Don't care.
Just a circle jerk, man.
And RFK Jr. was asked by Donald Trump what his role would be in
Tucker Carlson. You did it again.
Okay, so yeah.
Nazis are Nazis.
It's just, yeah, which one is which? Tucker Carlson asked RFK Jr. what his role would be in a Trump administration. And if you are not already scared of the potential of a Donald Trump administration, let this just be another weight to add to the pile that is terrifying.
How do you envision your role in a Trump administration?
President Trump has asked me specifically to do two things. One, to help unravel the capture of the agencies by corrupt influence. In other words, to drain the swamp. And I got to say something about President Trump. President Trump has some extraordinary gifts, and one of them is that he has very, very good instincts. And that when he came out the first time, you remember, he was very against the lockdowns publicly. He was for hydroxychloroquine. He was for alternative medicines. He was against the mass. He was doing, but he was surrounded by bureaucrats who, and, you know, knowledgeable experts who, you know, ultimately push back on those assumptions and get him, got him, you know, got us into some policies that I think were really bad for our country. He's not going to do that again. And his and he wanted to end the wars. He said back then, we don't want to go into a Ukraine war. I'd rather make a deal than have a war. So I think that, and he's asked me to do that, and he's asked me to help him end the childhood disease, chronic disease epidemic, and make Americans healthy again.
Horrifying. And I also love to remind people whenever we play RFK Jr. being anti-vax that, remember, he held a Christmas party at his house or a holiday party at his house and wanted the guests to be vaccinated or tested for COVID-19.
Yeah.
And that was in 2021. So as he's sitting there being anti-vax and talking about alternative medicine and how masks are bad, at his own holiday party, he wanted guests to be vaccinated and to have them tested for COVID-19.
Donald Trump has really good instincts.
Well, and think about, I'm glad you already played the drop. And a lot of people think that RFK Jr. is like some sort of Democrat or liberal or on the left.
He is not.
Saying that Donald Trump has extraordinary gifts is concerning to anyone who would try to represent themselves as a Democrat. Because we know what Donald Trump is and how dangerous he is. So why would you even make that statement that he has extraordinary gifts? It's because you're trying to ally yourself to Donald Trump. You're trying to cozy up to power.
To influence and power. Absolutely. He wants proximity to power. He wants to be in power, having a role in Donald Trump's administration. And we know this because he didn't call Donald Trump first. He called Kamala Harris first to try to get a position in her administration. And when those calls went unanswered, then he called Donald Trump.
Right. So he's just like so many of these politicians that are willing to say and do anything in order to gain power, hold on to power. And J.D. Vance, of course, is the most notable person right now that we can think of for that. But we want to talk a little bit about Kamala Harris because she recently made an appearance at the National Association of Black Journalists. You may remember that Donald Trump also made an appearance probably about a month ago now, where he made the accusation that she had turned black. That was like the first time that he had said that. And I appreciated several things about her appearance. We're going to play two things from it. But one of them is that she took the time to talk about Amber Nicole Thurman. And if you watched my video from yesterday, Amber Nicole Thurman is the first confirmed preventable death due to abortion bans. And this is in Georgia. ProPublica reported on this, uncovered this. The Maternal Mortality Review Committee, they collect data on deaths of women who die as a result of pregnancy. And
they determined, by the way, as an interjection, they determined Georgia's Maternal Mortality Review Committee, they determined it was a preventable death and that something could have been done if not for the abortion ban.
Right. And they're only reviewing cases right now up to fall 2022. So this is the first,
early on.
This is the first death that we're hearing about, and they're only to fall 2022. And I haven't heard widespread reporting on this. And I'm sitting here thinking, this is the first confirmed preventable death due to abortion bans, and you're not hearing about it everywhere.
Yeah.
But Kamala Harris,
it's the media missing the moment, failing the people of the United States right now.
Right. But Kamala Harris, thankfully, took time to talk about this.
Understand what is happening in our country. Over 20 states have passed what I call Trump abortion bans because I understand how we got here. The former president handpicked three members of the United States Supreme Court with the intention they would undo the protections of Roe v. Wade. They did as he intended, and in state after state, laws have been passed criminalizing health care providers. I don't know if anyone here has heard most recently the stories out of Georgia. A tragic story about a young woman who died because it appears the people who should have given her health care were afraid they'd be criminalized after the Dobbs decision came down. Laws that make no exception even for rape or incest, which means that you're telling a survivor of a crime of a violation to their body that they have no right to make a decision about what happens to their body next, which is immoral. An approach that doesn't take into account that most people, I think, agree you don't have to abandon your faith or deeply held beliefs to agree the government should not be telling her what to do with her body. If she chooses, she will talk with her pastor, her priest, her rabbi, her imam, but it should not be the government or Donald Trump telling her what to do about her own body and her life.
Let me also say this. If your faith dictates that you have to carry your rapist baby, your faith is fucking garbage. Full stop. I'm a little irritated at giving the religious exception excuse for people. Because what she's doing there, and this is a criticism of what she just said, is she's giving these white Christian nationalists a little bit of space. And it's fucked.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot about abortion on the previous episode, and I definitely want the party as a whole, the Democratic Party, to go further in their support of abortion rights. And, you know, a lot of criticism has been directed at hospital administrators who are not engaging in political advocacy and not standing with their physicians. They are instead concerned about liability.
Right.
With these abortion bans. And the thing is, I understand that it's a difficult position to be in where you're putting your life on the line, you're putting your career on the line, you could go to prison. But at a certain point, you have a duty to your patient who's in front of you, who's dying and who you know is dying. And so I'm just wondering, you know, all that to say, the point that I was going to make is that a lot of this started with Catholic hospitals, right? Catholic hospitals can turn you away because of their religious beliefs.
And, they can also lie and manipulate and act like, oh, that treatment's not sound. We're not going to do that, even though it's only based on the religious predilection of the particular doctrine that they follow.
And so, yeah, there shouldn't be this religious exception, right? I've read articles where doctors will say that they can't participate in a DNC, right? Because it goes against their religious beliefs. Why are you a doctor?
Right.
I mean, why are you in that profession? So then you need to leave when there's a dangerous situation where someone needs emergency medical care and they need to figure out like how to replace you or how to, why are you there? It seems like you're an impediment.
Well, I mean, it's like, someone finding their Amish sensibilities mid-flight. Like, oh, sorry, this is against my religion. I can't fly the plane. Well, then you don't get to be a fucking pilot, bro.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
So there was another moment where she talked about Springfield, and I just want to give an update because there's new Wall Street Journal reporting. And this is from our previous episode where both you and I were whining about the media.
How dare you? I never whine.
I whine all the time. We were critiquing the media because they're listening to J.D. Vance continue to make these claims that he's getting reports from his constituents that they have had pets go missing, that their pets are being eaten by Haitian immigrants. And I kept saying, you keep saying, why isn't the media interrogating those claims? Asking him, well, are the constituents that are calling you, did they make police reports? Where did that go?
What are their names so we can go track it down?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, we need to dig into this a little bit. Well, finally, the Wall Street Journal did. And I'm going to get to that in a second. But first, starting just with the claims themselves, Wall Street Journal, I'm going to read from this, quote, City Manager Brian Heck fielded an unusual question at City Hall on the morning of September 9th from a staff member of Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance. The staffer called to ask if there was any truth to the bizarre rumors about Haitian immigrants and pets in Springfield. Quote, he asked point blank, are the rumors true of pets being taken and eaten? Recalled City Manager Brian Heck. Quote, I told him no. There was no verifiable evidence or reports to show this was true. I told them these claims were baseless. By then, Vance had already posted about the rumors to his 1.9 million followers on Twitter. They call it X, I don't. Yet he kept the post up and repeated an even more insistent version of the claim the next morning. That night, former President Donald Trump stood on a Philadelphia debate stage and shot the rumor into the stratosphere. In Springfield, they're eating the dogs. We get it. So they knew.
And ran with it anyway.
And
because they knew what the result would be.
Absolutely. So now getting to the constituent aspect of this, the Wall Street Journal tracked down one of these people that J.D. Vance claims is calling him, all of these constituents that are calling him and telling him that this is happening. And this is from the Wall Street Journal again. Quote, a Vance spokesperson on Tuesday provided the Wall Street Journal with a police report in which a resident had claimed her pet might have been taken by Haitian neighbors. But when a reporter went to Anna Kilgore's house Tuesday evening, she said her cat, Miss Sassy, which went missing in...
Solid name, no notes, great name for a cat.
Which went missing in late August.
Especially if the cat's sassy.
Had actually returned a few days later, found safe in her own basement.
So the cat was just being sassy, went on a walkabout, and was found.
Uneaten by
Haitian immigrants.
Anna Kilgore, wearing a Trump shirt and hat, said she apologized to her Haitian neighbors with the help of her daughter and a mobile phone translation app. So again, the stories that J.D. Vance is continuing to push that are causing bomb threats, that are causing Haitian immigrants in that community to fear for their safety. He knew they were lies before he put them on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And now we know that the people that he's claiming are calling him with these reports are actually just having their cat go missing and then walk back into their house because, hey, cats sometimes do whatever the fuck they want, right?
Yeah, also, notable that she's still a Trump supporter, even though she knows they're lying about the thing. It's just she's got a flag outside of her porch and she's wearing a fucking Trump shirt and a Trump hat. It's just gross. So there is no low too low. It's not like, oh, why, I was wrong, but they're still telling the lie. This is a bridge too far for me. She doesn't give a fuck.
Right. So Kamala Harris was asked about all of this, about Springfield, what her response is, and I thought she had a good answer.
Vice President, I want to move to Springfield, Ohio, and what's happening there. We've seen school closures, parents worried about their kids leaving the home because of racist conspiracy theories that I won't repeat here, but they have been repeated by leaders on the Republican side, President Trump, former President Trump, Vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance. From your perspective, is this just a case of irredeemable racism that can't be mitigated by any rational action? Or is this a situation in which a federal response could help this community heal? There's a question of resources and...
I'll let you finish and then I'll speak.
No comments.
It's a crying shame. I mean, my heart breaks for this community. You know, there were children, elementary school children, who it was school photo day. You remember what that's like? Going to school on picture day? Who were dressed up in their best, got all ready, knew what they were going to wear the night before, and had to be evacuated. Children. A whole community put in fear. And I'll say a couple things about it. One, you know, I learned a long time ago in my career, having a background as a prosecutor, when you have these positions, when you have that kind of microphone in front of you, you really ought to understand at a very deep level how much your words have meaning. I learned at a very young stage of my career that the meaning of my words could impact whether somebody was free or in prison. As Attorney General, I was of California, fifth largest economy in the world. I was acutely aware that my words could move markets. When you are bestowed with a microphone that is that big, there is a profound responsibility that comes with that. That is an extension of what should not be lost in this moment, this concept of the public trust, to then understand what the public trust means. It means that you have been invested with trust to be responsible in the way you use your words, much less how you conduct yourself. And especially when you have been and then seek to be again President of the United States of America. And so I go back to, it's a crying shame, literally. What's happening to those families, those children in that community?
It is asinine for Republicans to assert that this person is not qualified to be president of the United States based on that she can't speak extemporaneously, she can't answer questions, there's no complexity, there's no intelligence. It's just fucking racism. That's somebody who cares, and that's somebody who can articulate it.
Yeah, I mean, juxtapose that to the clips that we played earlier of Donald Trump. Is he ever, have you ever heard him talk about what other people might be thinking or feeling?
Oh, no, of course not.
Or it's, how the things...
It's Hannibal Lecter, sharks and sunken boats and batteries and windmills.
Or even being thoughtful about the ways that his words or his behaviors may negatively impact other people.
Absolutely not.
What an important thing that you need from someone in a position of power.
Yeah, but why would he care when they're vermin?
Right.
Why would he care about the havoc that's being brought upon the Haitian community in Springfield, Ohio, when they are poisoning the blood of our country?
Right.
He's just a fucking vile, sinister America's Hitler.
Well, and J.D. Vance is now trying to say, related to the Springfield, Ohio situation, because he's desperate, because he, you know, got caught during his interview with Dana Bash over the weekend saying that if he needs to create stories, and then he tried to act like, no, I meant that phrase as though I'm just trying to get the media to talk about it.
Right. Again, putting on my psychiatrist hat, that is what we call in the biz as a Freudian slip.
So he is now saying that the Ohio governor, Mike DeWine, is calling all of these bomb threats hoaxes, that they are all coming from foreign governments, foreign countries, sorry, not governments, foreign countries, and that they are hoaxes. So Republican governor, this is important to remember when you hear Mike DeWine talk, I think you will understand that he's a Republican. Mike DeWine was actually asked during an interview on PBS NewsHour with Amna Nawaz what his response is to J.D. Vance saying that these are hoaxes.
So I want to put to you something that Senator Vance said earlier at a rally today. He quoted you saying that you had said every single one of the bomb threats that Springfield, Ohio has seen was a hoax, and all of the bomb threats came from foreign countries. Just for clarification, is that accurate?
Some of the bomb threats came from foreign countries. Others came from in the United States. And all of them have been hoaxes. That's correct. None of them have panned out. We've obviously checked each one
out. That's not what a hoax is, dude.
They've been very disruptive. Schools have had to close. You know, we put in our highway patrol to the schools so they can be open today. And I was glad to see a lot of students were back when Fran and I visited there today.
So when you say that they're hoaxes, that means there haven't actually been bombings. They have been threats. But as you just heard from my colleague's conversation with the Springfield city manager, he said you have to respond to everyone as if it could be real. So if the intention is to sow fear, is it working?
Well, Fran and I were in schools today. We talked to kindergartners, first graders, second graders, and to teachers. And what the teachers said is the kids are doing well today. But yesterday, they had a tough day. That's how the teachers described it. So if the kids are having a tough day, you can imagine that parents have had a tough day. It's been very disruptive. We've seen Wittenberg close our university. We've seen our Clark State Community College have to close. So, yeah, this has been very, very disruptive and very concerning. And, you know, our message has been we're going to supply the help. Our schools need to stay open. And we want parents to be able to feel good about sending their children to school. So we've put 36 members of the Ohio State Highway Patrol, our special unit, literally in the schools. They go in the morning in the schools. They make sure there's no bombs, there's nothing. We just want to be able to assure the parents that, you know, it is safe. And if I was a parent, I would be concerned as well with all these different threats and all this rancor and all this hate.
To that point, Governor, former President Trump and Senator Vance have been leaning into dehumanizing and racist tropes about people in need who are legally in your state, saying that they're stealing jobs and that they're stealing homes and accusing them without evidence of barbaric behavior. Is that language fueling these threats?
Well, the immigration issue and the border issue obviously is fair game. We can certainly do better on the border than we're doing. We could do a lot better. But if you want to talk about these individuals, these Haitians who are in our cities, our city, look, they're legal. They came here because they want to work. They have been hired by our local businessmen and women. And when we talked to them the other morning, they told us these are great workers. They come to work. They want to work. In fact, they want to work overtime. They're being paid just what, obviously, what anybody else would be paid. So they have been a boost to the economy. Springfield and Ohio is really coming back. And Springfield has seen a lot of new industry come in. And there weren't enough workers. This is what the companies told us after the pandemic, when everything started moving forward, there was not enough workers. And so they started filling them in with these Haitians. So those comments are, about eating dogs and things are very hurtful. They're very hurtful for these men and women who work very, very hard. They're obviously very hurtful for their children.
That's wanting it both ways, Mike DeWine.
Yeah, and that's why I said you're going to be able to tell that he's a Republican, because he's in some ways saying the right things and then in other ways attempting to not go there, in terms of these comments are damaging to our community and they are destructive. And in fact, after he gives that response about how they're hurtful comments, Amna Nawaz challenges him and says, okay, but without these comments, do you feel like these threats would be coming into this community? Basically, making a causal accusation, right? That because they have leveled these threats, because they have leveled these accusations, the threats are coming into the community. So you can't separate it. You cannot separate what Donald Trump is saying, what J.D. Vance is saying, from what is happening to this community.
It's also interesting to me that Mike DeWine here is admitting, much like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, that Donald Trump, it wasn't an assassination attempt, this last thing. It was a hoax.
Oh,
it was a hoax because it didn't pan out, to use his words. All of these have been hoaxes because none of them panned out. All right. The second assassination attempt of Donald Trump, also a hoax. Fuck off. You don't get it both ways, little Mike DeWine.
Yes. So we would love to know what you think about any of the topics that we discussed on this episode or any of our episodes prior. You can call and leave a voicemail, 657-464-7609, or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
It's the asshole of today.
Matt Walsh from the Daily Wire. Not Matt Walsh from the hilarious HBO series Veep.
Oh, right. Yeah, what a bummer for him.
Fucking bummer.
So Matt Walsh is...
from the Daily Wire.
Yes, from the Daily Wire, not from Veep, the wonderful comedic actor. Matt Walsh of the Daily Wire. He has some thoughts about adults taking sick days.
And probably about Band-Aids and helmets as well. But in this, it's just about sick days.
A side note on the sick day thing is, this will be unpopular, especially with younger people, but you shouldn't be using sick days, okay? I've used sick days maybe twice in 7 years, and in both of those cases, because I lost my voice and I couldn't speak, you can't blame me for that. It's impossible to do a podcast when you can't speak. And even then, anyone who has been watching the show for a while, I still came into the office and recorded a video with subtitles when I lost my voice, if you recall. But generally speaking, again, I know this is unpopular, but sick days are for children, okay? They're for kids in school who are trying to stay home so they don't have to take a test that day. Like, with rare exception, taking a sick day as an adult should be pretty embarrassing for you. Calling your boss and saying, sorry, I can't come in today, my tummy hurts, is humiliating. You need to be at work, okay? Adults don't have time to be sick. They see you, they don't have time for it. That's. I was just having this conversation with my kids recently, actually, because I was kind of under the weather, and my kids were aware of that. And they said, well, so why are you going to work? I said, because I don't have time to be sick. Okay, I don't know. I can't be. I don't have time. But you are sick. Yeah, but I don't have time for it. So it's like I'm operating as though I'm not.
So Dumbfuck says sick days, with few exceptions that just so happen to apply to me, are for children.
Right.
Yeah.
His very hard job of podcasting.
Yeah.
So also, why does he say he's used 2 sick days in 7 years? Because he's 38 years old. So when did he start working, and why is he only talking about 7 years of work? Has he only worked for 7 years?
I don't know his background, but is that how long he's been with the Daily Wire?
So he can only talk about his working years that he's been with the Daily Wire.
Also, he's not asserting that people don't get sick, is he? Because you could kind of extrapolate that from what he's saying.
Yeah, no, he's just
saying,
I don't
have time to get sick. Well, it doesn't matter if you're sick, bro.
Yeah, I think, well, living in denial is kind of a feature of his personality.
So did he not get COVID at all?
It's a comfortable state for him to be in, is just living in a state of denial. But yeah, he's basically saying, like, you know, it's humiliating to admit that you're sick to your boss. So similar to the helmets and the lotion and the wearing gloves when you're cold.
Is he just trying to hide it and cover it up? Because he's clearly loves to cover stuff up. He's trying to hide that he's lacking a chin with that sorry excuse for a beard.
So I think that he...
I already played the disclaimer drop.
I know that you did. It applies universally. So I... You know, we were just talking about this recently because we had some friends visiting, and we were talking about what a different time it was when you actually would go to work sick.
Yeah.
And people may not remember that was a thing, like before the pandemic really changed people's perspectives about being around other people when you're sick. But there used to be a time when it was actually pretty normal for people to show up to work sick. I remember one time I was working and my coworker was visibly ill, and she tried to give me a snack from her sandwich bag.
What?
And I was like, that's straight up sabotage. Like, you are trying to infect me with your disease. And I remember when I was presenting for a site conference, maybe 10 years ago at this point, I was so ill when I was printing my poster at Kinko's, I passed out.
I had to rush over and grab you. Literally almost passed out. I had to get you a chair.
Yeah. And I was so ill on that trip. I flew on the plane. I was at the conference. It was a nightmare.
Just something everybody did.
Yeah. And he wants that to continue. He wants us to all spread disease in the workplace rather than ensure people are healthy.
Yeah, no comfort. Everybody should be fucking miserable. We should spread our filth and illness to everybody else so they're sick and then they have to go into work, which continues to spread it. It doesn't make any fucking sense. It's all, oh, I'm tough. I'm a man.
And I wonder if it's also a way to validate that the government shouldn't be providing any sort of like parental leave, right? Their positions on all of that, and like sick leave is a thing that shouldn't exist.
It's just false bravado.
And yeah, especially from someone who is a millionaire, who makes a lot of money, who doesn't have a job where he's on his feet. I was going to say, you know, who doesn't have a real job, but I'm sure he feels like he's working hard a lot.
Very masculine job.
Contributing a lot of...
Brittany, podcasting and doing videos on YouTube... Very masculine. Don't call into question my masculinity. Listen, very manly.
It is work, right? But it's very different than someone who's going to stand on their feet for 8 hours
yes.
a day.
Yes.
And as if you have had a job like that, you understand that it is very hard to do that for a long time. And based on Matt Walsh from Daily Wire saying that he has used 2 sick days in 7 years at 38 years old, I'm just interested in when he started working, because I started working when I was a teenager. So
yeah.
I don't really want to hear from someone about
whether... Out of necessity, not for extra spending money.
Yeah, I don't want to hear from someone who thinks that we shouldn't use sick days when they're a millionaire, they talk into a microphone for a living, and they want to pull the ladder up behind them.
Here's a message from Matt Walsh to Brittany Page. Speaking of leaving it, we're going to leave you there. We love you and appreciate you. We'd ask you to consider becoming a Patreon supporter on Patreon, helping produce this program. You can go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast. We welcome your contribution to this conversation, 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone to IDoubtIt@Dollemore.com. Again, we are going to leave you there. We love you. We appreciate you. For Brittany Page, for her, I am Jesse Dollemore. This has been I Doubt It.